You're listening to the Preacher's Side Chick Murder Trial of Latasha Daniels from the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.
But the criminal attempt first degree murder and pulling a firearm, the defense had provided me with some cases. Also, Mr. McAlpine sent me a case as well, State v. Claxton. W200901679CCAR3CD. And so after reviewing those cases, again, the standard is, after viewing the evidence in light most favorable to the prosecution, any rational trier fact could find beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant is guilty of the offense. And Millen versus State laid out what the standard is. In short, if evidence demonstrates that the defendant intended to cause or result the death of a person, that he did so with premeditation and deliberation, then the killing of another, even if not the intended victim, intended result is first degree murder. So also State v. Claxton sets forward things that can be considered for premeditation: the use of a deadly weapon upon an unarmed victim, the particular cruelty of the killing, declarations by the defendant of the intent to kill, evidence of procurement of a weapon, preparation before the killing for concealment of the crime, and calmness immediately after the killing. And so in considering those things, the court finds that there is sufficient evidence for this matter to go forward with the jury, because although the defendant may not have intended to kill Miss Perry, the law says that all that's required is that she had the intent to kill a person, and that person would have been Brodus Perry, who was shot multiple times. So in considering all those things, the court finds that there is sufficient evidence for this matter to proceed to the jury. I know there was some indication about felony murder, but that case also, it says something about criminal attempt murder, whenever it's not the intent victim, should be felony murder. But that case also says that it can be criminal attempt premeditated murder as well, just not felony murder, just when it's not the intended victim. So the court finds that there's sufficient evidence, and because the court finds that there's sufficient evidence on criminal attempt murder one and count two, the court also finds that there is sufficient evidence for the case to go forward to the jury on employment of a firearm. As indicated in my previous ruling, the defendant used the allegation that she used the firearm in commission of the criminal attempt murder, which the court finds that there is sufficient evidence for that to go forward to the jury, that she did so intentionally. So the court's going to deny the motion for judgment of acquittal at this time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And then there was a second issue, and I guess we can approach about that. And I made one more correction on the criminal attempt first degree murder. And I think she sent that out to you. Well, were there any corrections or anything from what the party saw?
I did, Your Honor. I don't know if the state wants to go first.
I just have one issue that I would probably, and it's always been something I haven't understood. So when the definitions of intentionally and transferred intent is in second degree murder, but not in first degree murder, and I don't understand why that is.
You say it's second.
Right. And so my position is that that language should be in the charge for murder one, because it is a criminal attempt murder one. It doesn't affect
criminal attempt second degree murder. Just second degree murder.
Well, so yeah, so I don't, the transferred intent element is, so the criminal attempt, by the time you get there, the court is saying, I've already defined
I changed it.
Oh, did you?
I did.
Okay.
Because the criminal attempt with serious bodily injury, I included, hold on, let me make sure she said she was correct.
And she may have.
We got it corrected one last night.
Okay. It's another.
Or this morning,
actually. Yeah, let me make sure.
That fixes my issue.
Okay. Did you have anything else?
No, ma'am.
Okay. All right.
Just note my objection to the change.
Okay. All right. Did you have any other changes, Ms. Fuchs?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
On page 2, this is a unique situation in that at the last paragraph, or the last sentence of the paragraphs regarding first degree and criminal attempt first degree, it says that Latasha Daniels pleads not guilty to every count as encompassed. To every charge as encompassed. And we are not saying that she is not guilty of all of those offenses. We are saying that she is not guilty of first degree murder. She is not guilty of second degree murder. That this is at best a voluntary manslaughter. So I would like to take that language out, or at least change it to has pled guilty to the originally charged offense, or something along those lines.
Okay, which part are you talking about?
It's page 2. It's the last sentence.
The defendant pleads not guilty to each and every offense and breaks and not. You just want me to take that out completely on each one of them?
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. I can do that. Any objection from the state?
No, ma'am.
Okay. You have to take that out. No problem. Anything else?
Yes, Your Honor. Regarding the section on defendant testifying,
let's see.
It's on.
I know they're not numbers. Let's see.
It's after direct and circumstantial evidence.
Okay, defendant testifying. Yes.
Your Honor, I would just ask, it does say, like, subject to all of the rules that apply to judging the credibility of other witnesses. I would just ask that it be made clear that, just like with other witnesses, the law presumes that a testifying witness is telling the truth and to be given a full and fair consideration. I mean, really, that first paragraph of credibility of the witness, minus all of the factors that they need to look at, I would suggest adding into that defendant testifying so that it's clear that the same rules apply for Ms. Daniels as applied to all of the other witnesses.
So what are you suggesting the end? What language are you suggesting?
The if you go to, so it's kind of cross-referencing, if you go to the credibility of the witness.
Okay, I'm here.
25 pages in. That yes. First paragraph that says, if there are conflicts in the testimony of different witnesses, it is your duty to reconcile them if you can, mm-hmm. for the law presumes that every witness has told the truth. But when you cannot reconcile the statements of different witnesses, then you must decide which witness or witnesses you believe and how important their testimony was. You do not have to accept that basically that whole first paragraph for the credibility of the witnesses. But particularly the fact that the law presumes that witnesses are testifying truthfully if the jury can find them. But if there are conflicts in the testimony of different witnesses, it is your duty to reconcile them if you can, for the law presumes that every witness has told the truth. Just because it's one says witnesses and one says defendants, so I want to make clear that the defendant is a witness that also has the presumption that they are telling the truth.
Okay, so the language specifically that you want to add is, I want to make sure I have that clear.
If there are conflicts in the testimony of different witnesses, it is your duty to reconcile them if you can, for the law presumes that every witness has told the truth.
In the end, her credibility is determined by the same rules or credibility of other witnesses determined. So you just want to add that one sentence.
Yes.
All right, what's the state's position on that?
It's the pattern instruction. It's clear to me. I don't see a reason to change with the instructions from the AOCR on that.
quickest, because I'm telling them that she's determined by the same rule of credibility of other witnesses, and then this is the section on credibility of witnesses, and those are the rules.
What we could do in the alternative would be, in the credibility of a witness section, include a phrase that, you know, the credibility of the witnesses, the law presumes that every witness, including the defendant in this case, that would achieve the same goal. I just want to make clear that the law also presumes that Ms. Daniels is telling the truth, just as it does with all of the other witnesses.
What's the state's position on that?
Again, I don't know how that's not clear. She's a witness, and specifically tells the jury that they're to judge her by the same credibility as every other witness. Adding anything just like almost emphasizes to the jury that you should believe the defendant more than any other witness in the state's mind. That's not appropriate. So the charge is clear, and it's the pattern charge, and I'm opposed to any change in that.
Your Honor, I disagree. I think that when we have referred to witnesses throughout this entire trial, and we have referred to the defendant throughout the entire trial, those sound like two separate parties. And so if the jury's not clear that even though she is the defendant, she also, under the law and under the instructions, is a witness that should be treated the same way as the other witnesses, then that is that's impairing her right to have a fair consideration by the jury.
Or can we just say that the defendant is a witness and without obvious?
I mean, I think
having testified, defendant as a witness, having testified in her own behalf, her credibility is to be determined by the same rules that the credibility of other witnesses is determined, and you will have to give the defendant's testimony in this case such weight as you may think it is entitled.
That's, Your Honor, I guess my issue with that is that the language in those two sections are very different. The language between the general credibility of a witness and the assessing the defendant testimony is very different language. Give it whatever weight you think it deserves. Is very different than the law presumes that these people are telling the truth.
I'll come back to that one.
Your Honor, there also, we had talked a little bit a couple months ago about the Supreme Court denial of certiorari from Sotomayor regarding Tennessee's instructions on second-degree murder and voluntary manslaughter. Justice Sotomayor took the position that Tennessee's instructions for sequential considerations in regards to second-degree murder and voluntary manslaughter are unconstitutional. And that is because voluntary manslaughter actually has an extra element that is not in second-degree murder. And we should be moving down and reducing elements rather than adding them. As far as the order of consideration being sequential, I would ask that the court instruct the jury to consider second-degree murder and voluntary manslaughter together rather than sequentially, because voluntary manslaughter has that separate element that makes it different than second-degree murder. But it's an additional element, an additional finding that the jury would not be able to get to if they did not move past second degree. So I would just ask on the sequential consideration to consider those two together.
What's the state's position?
That opinion did not change the law in Tennessee. It was one justice's opinion who was in the minority. Until the law changes, I think it's clear that the way we charge this in Tennessee is first degree, second degree, and then voluntary manslaughter.
I mean, I get your point. I mean, it makes sense, but, you know, at this time, the law is what the law is. But I definitely get it. You know, it's an additional element, but the law at this point, I have to follow what the law is currently. And so I note your objection because I get it's an additional element. And usually when it's a lesser included, it's one that goes, you know, it's a less element. But in this case, there is an additional element. And so it makes sense to me, but, you know, I have to follow what the law is currently, which they go in that order. So I'm going to have to overrule that objection at this time.
Thank you, Your Honor. And then I would just note on page 39, there was a somewhat duplicative. It was no outside communications, but on page 2, there's no independent research or discussions. So I just wanted to note the duplication.
Okay.
And it's not an exact duplication, but it's very, very similar.
Okay. You have any objection to that being removed?
No, ma'am.
All right. All right, give me a second on that other one. I have to step off and do a little research.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. On the defendant testifying, I'm going to leave the instruction the same because I don't want to, I mean, the length, I feel like it's duplicitous to put that in there twice because the defendant testifies, she's treated as a witness, and the instructions say her credibility is determined by the same rules that the credibility of other witnesses is determined. And so the credibility of witnesses, there's a section titled that with everything that she's supposed to be given the same weight as everyone else. So I'm going to deny that request at this time.
And Your Honor will not consider even adding the language that you had suggested about saying when she testifies, she's considered a witness.
I'm going to leave the same. All right. Were there any other corrections? I gave you each a copy. Y'all want to take a moment to look at it to make sure there's not anything else before we print them off.
If we can have a minute, please.
Okay, sure.
On intentionality, the pattern instruction.
Which one? Which section?
What was added to the criminal attempt?
That's a pattern instruction for criminal attempt. First degree murder with serious bodily injury. That's the pattern instruction.
Is it the pattern instruction for regular first degree?
There is two separate instructions. It's one for first degree murder, and then there's a separate instruction for criminal attempt, first degree murder with serious bodily injury.
Yes.
There's a separate instruction.
I guess my issue is that by adding, we're adding language to the criminal attempt first degree murder that's not in the pattern instruction. This says the essential elements necessary to constitute first degree murder are, and then it goes into that paragraph that is not part of the pattern instruction.
I think this was, hold on.
The jury this is first degree murder, but it's different than the pattern given for first degree murder.
It's an attempt. So it said the defendant unlawfully killed the alleged victim, that the defendant acted intentionally. Oh, we forgot in the killing was premeditated. That's one information she had there. That's the instruction. that the essential elements necessary to constitute first-degree murder are the defendant unlawfully killed the alleged victim. That's under the first-degree murder in count one. The defendant acted intentionally. That's there. And that the killing was premeditated.
Yes. But the what I'm looking at on the instructions that you're giving for first-degree murder says that the defendant acted intentionally. A person acts intentionally when it's the person's conscious objective or desire to cause the death of the alleged victim.
Right. And so, what's the additional language is not there?
It just is, I think it will be confusing to have two different definitions of first-degree murder in the same.
The difference is that because it's criminal attempt first-degree murder, there's a reference to Millen, State v. Millen, and the fact that you can have the intent to kill another person. And so I think that's why the additional language is there in criminal attempt first-degree murder versus first-degree murder, because of the fact that you can get criminal attempt murder by just having the intent to kill someone, not necessarily the person who is alleged in the indictment. So I think that's what the distinction is.
Okay. I just was concerned by the fact that we have two different definitions of first degree murder.
Yeah, I think it's just different because of that. In the pattern instructions, that language is there. And I think it's because of that law. And that's bracketed language, what I included. So it's not always included. But I included that because there's an issue about intent, you know, whether she had the intent to kill Miss Perry. So it's bracketed language. It's not necessarily required to be included in there. But I included in there because of the proof that came out.
Thank you,
Ryan. All
right,
you're welcome.
Would Your Honor consider, given the issues about the voluntary manslaughter and second-degree murder, would you consider a sentence at the end of the first paragraph under second-degree indicating under with second-degree the jury should take it or should consider whether a heat of passion was present at the time of the alleged killing? Putting that they should be considering that at that point in time as a way to address that issue?
This would be a pattern instruction. So do you have any case law to say that I can't do that?
Your Honor can, I mean, you are allowed to change instructions. We're allowed to draft instructions and put them forward for the court's approval. They just have to comport with the law. And as long as they comport with the law, the court is allowed discretion within the jury instructions.
Okay, what is the jury asking for again?
So because of this issue, that is a very new issue brought up by that denial of writ with Sotomayor basically telling Tennessee Supreme Court, you need to fix this. It is currently unconstitutional. We have been told by the United States Supreme Court that our jury instruction framework is unconstitutional. This is a way to address that so that Ms. Daniels gets a fair consideration by this court when they're comparing second-degree murder and voluntary manslaughter. And especially in this kind of case, when we're saying this is a voluntary manslaughter, that for them to not be allowed to move to that section because of the way that our jury instructions are ordered completely denies her right to a fair trial. So if we just added a sentence to say, you know, this is the distinction between voluntary manslaughter and second-degree murder, is that voluntary manslaughter requires the killing result from the state of passion produced by adequate provocation from the alleged victim sufficient to lead a reasonable person to act in an irrational manner. Even if you just said, you know, like the jury should consider whether a heat of passion was present during this alleged shooting. Here.
I think it's already saying that, though. Because, I mean, it's telling you a distinction between both. And so.
Yes, but it's not telling them to consider voluntary manslaughter yet.
What's the state's position?
The law in Tennessee is that you charge first-degree murder, second-degree murder, and voluntary manslaughter. So that changes. I think that's what the court should do.
And I get your point, Ms. Speaks. I do. I understand what you're saying. It's just this is the law, and I have to follow what the law is. But I get your point.
And I'm not asking you to change the law. I'm asking you to provide some clarification to the jurors regarding that. And that's what these instructions are supposed to do. They're supposed to help guide them through this process. And when we have a situation to where second-degree murder and voluntary manslaughter are sequential, they don't move to that heat of passion according to the jury instructions. They don't move to that heat of passion until they completely acquit of second-degree murder. Then if you don't tell them, you need to take this into consideration here before you, I mean, like, if in the decision on whether or not to acquit on second degree and move down to voluntary manslaughter, then they don't get to the point that they are able to consider that as an element. That's asking them to do the cafeteria style that we're not allowed to do.
I mean, these are the pattern instructions adopted by the Supreme Court, and at this point, I'm gonna deny the request. I get it, but I'm gonna deny the request because that, I mean, these are what they have set out, you know, what we're to use. So at this point, I'm gonna deny the request.
Given the fact that the jury instruction requests specifically are supposed to be in writing, would the court give me a moment just to draft a pleading so that I can file it to have it in writing to make the record?
Yes.
Thank you. No, Your Honor, I will include in that written request my additional request for the language regarding the defendant and witness criminal. Okay.
But other than that, there's no those objections or anything else.
Oh, the issue, did you take out the language of the not pleading not guilty?
Yes, I took that out. Did the state have any corrections?
Mm-hmm.
For the section on defendant testifying.
What's the state's position?
I thought that's generally given when the defendant doesn't testify. So I'm not sure what the purpose of it is if the defendant testified.
What's the point?
Your Honor, it's to clarify the burden of proof. It is to make clear, and I'm checking the burden of proof section now. But being clear that does not place a burden of proof on the defendant.
Guilt of the defendant beyond a reasonable doubt, and this burden never shifts but remains in the state throughout the trial of the case. The defendant is not required to prove her innocence. So I think this, yeah. She didn't have to prove anything.
crime charge and plea.
Oh, okay. It's changed to crime charge.
Yes.
Correct.
Or if we wanted to leave the and plea, we could add a second, like a final sentence that says the defendant pleads not guilty to the offenses as charged.
What's the state's position on that?
Either one of those is.
I'd prefer the second.
The defendant
pleads not guilty to the offenses as charged in the indictment.
Defendant pleads not guilty to the as charged. Is what it is charged.
To the offenses as charged in the indictment.
Okay.
And just semantically, I'd probably rather offenses charged rather than crime charged.
What do you mean on the heading, offenses charged?
Yes.
What's the safe position?
Yeah, I can give it an inch. It's a crime. It's charged as a crime, and that's what this charge says. So I don't know why we would change that.
This is charged crime. Right. This is charged. So do you want to keep the language about the plea?
If we could just add that final sentence, the defendant pleaded not guilty to the offenses as charged in the indictment.
Okay, but the heading.
Yes, then we can leave it offenses charged and plea. And then it outlines the offenses and then gives the plea.
Okay. All right, so were there any other changes besides that before we make the copies? I note your objection.
Thank you, Your Honor. I do have that written request on the way.
Okay.
I thought of when you walked out was adding page numbers.
Okay. Page. What's your position, Mr. Nicky?
I don't have a position on page
numbers. Okay.
We don't, if you've already started printing.
We haven't printed it yet. Okay.
Just kind of as a logistics matter, are we planning charge, lunch, close? It's 11:15 now.
I know. And it's looking like it's going to be that way, but I was hoping that we could get it done before lunch, but it's probably not going to happen, but I was hoping.
The court could limit the time for that.
I need to do that. But, okay. All right. Then we need to address before the juror comes in.
Not from the state, no.
Okay. All right, we can get the juror in.
Jurors are entering the courtroom, Your Honor.
You may be seated. Good morning.
Good morning.
While we're ready to get back to work, it's now time for me to instruct you on the law. If you could pass them a copy of the instruction. Tennessee versus Latasha Daniels, indictment number 2501253. Members of the jury, the evidence in this case has been completed and the arguments are soon to follow. Now it is my duty now to instruct you as to the law. The law applicable to this case is stated in these instructions. It is your duty to carefully consider all of them. The order in which these instructions are given is no indication of their relative importance. You should not single out any one or more of them to the exclusion of another or others, but should consider each one in light of and in harmony with the others. You are the exclusive judges of the facts in this case. Also, you are the exclusive judges of the law under the direction of the court. You should apply the law to the facts in deciding this case. You should consider all of the evidence in the light of your own observations and experience in life. Offense is charged and plea. The defendant, Latasha Daniels, is charged in count one of the indictment with the crime of murder first degree. The offense necessarily includes the lesser offenses of murder second degree, voluntary manslaughter, reckless homicide, and criminally negligent homicide. The defendant, Latasha Daniels, is charged in count two of the indictment with the crime of criminal attempt murder first degree. The offense necessarily includes the lesser offenses of criminal attempt murder second degree, criminal attempt voluntary manslaughter, and reckless endangerment. The defendant, Latasha Daniels, is charged in count three of the indictment with the crime of employing a firearm during a felony. The offense necessarily includes the lesser offense of possessing a firearm during a felony. The defendant pleads not guilty to the offenses as charged in the indictment. The law makes it the duty of the court to give and charge the jury the law relative to the case on trial, and the duty of the jury to carefully consider all of the evidence delivered to them on the trial and under the law given them by the court, render their verdict with absolute impartiality. No independent research or discussion. You as jurors must decide this case based solely on the evidence presented here within the four walls of this courtroom. This means that during the trial, you must not conduct any independent research about this case, the matters in the case, and the individuals involved in the case. In other words, you should not consult dictionaries or reference materials, search the internet, websites, blogs, or use any other electronic tools to obtain information about this case or to help you decide the case. Please do not try to find that information from any source outside the confines of this courtroom. Until you retire to deliberate, you may not discuss this case with anyone, even your fellow jurors. After you retire to deliberate, you may begin discussing the case with your fellow jurors, but you cannot discuss the case with anyone else until you have returned a verdict and the case is at an end. I hope that for all of you, this case is interesting and noteworthy. I know that many of you use cell phones, the internet, and other tools of technology. You also must not talk to anyone about this case or use these tools to communicate electronically with anyone about the case. This includes your family and friends. During your deliberations, you must not communicate with or provide any information to anyone by any means about this case outside the jury deliberation room. You may not use any electronic device or media, such as telephone, cell phone, smartphone, iPhone, or computer, the internet, any internet service, or any text or instant messaging service, or any internet chat room, blog, or website, including but not limited to Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Snapchat, Instagram, Google, Twitter, or any other social media to communicate to anyone any information about this case or to conduct any research about this case until you have returned your verdict and the trial has concluded. No sympathy or prejudice by the jury. You can have no prejudice or sympathy or allow anything but the law and the evidence to have any influence upon your verdict. You must render your verdict with absolute fairness and impartiality as you think justice and truth dictate. Notes. Members of the jurors, you have been allowed to take notes in this case. The court charges you that these notes are for your individual use only, and you should not use said notes directly or indirectly to persuade other jurors as to the accuracy of said notes. They should not be shown to others, nor compared, nor referred to in any way as authority, but should be used privately only by the maker of said notes as an aid to his or her individual memory. Indictment. The indictment in this case is a formal written accusation charging the defendant with these crimes. It is not evidence against the defendant and does not create any inference of guilt. Statements and rulings of the court. At times during the trial, I have ruled upon the admissibility of evidence. You must not concern yourself with these rulings, neither by such rulings, these instructions, nor any other remarks which I have made do I mean to indicate any opinion as to the facts or as to what your verdict should be. Statements and arguments of counsel. Statements, arguments, and remarks of counsel are intended to help you in understanding the evidence and applying the law, but they are not evidence. If any statements were made that you believe are not supported by the evidence, you should disregard them. The court will now explain to you the law applicable to count one of this indictment, murder first degree premeditated killing. Any person who commits the offense of first degree murder is guilty of a crime. For you to find the defendant guilty of this offense, the state must have proven beyond a reasonable doubt the existence of the following essential elements. One, that the defendant unlawfully killed the alleged victim, Brodus Perry. And two, that the defendant acted intentionally. A person acts intentionally when it's the person's conscious objective or desire to cause the death of the alleged victim. And three, that the killing was premeditated. Intentionally means that a person acts intentionally when it's the person's conscious objective or desire to cause the death of the alleged victim. A premeditated act is one done after exercise of reflection and judgment. Premeditation means that the intent to kill must have been formed prior to the act itself. It is not necessary that the purpose to kill pre-exists in the mind of the accused for any definite period of time. The mental state of the accused at the time she allegedly decided to kill must be carefully considered in order to determine whether the accused was sufficiently free from excitement and passion as to be capable of premeditation. If the design to kill was formed with premeditation, it is immaterial that the accused may have been in a state of passion or excitement when the design was carried into effect. Furthermore, premeditation can be found if the decision to kill is first formed during the heat of passion, but the accused commits the crime after the passion has subsided. Second-degree murder, knowing killing of another. Any person who commits second-degree murder is guilty of a crime. For you to find the defendant guilty of this offense, the state must have proven beyond a reasonable doubt the existence of the following essential elements. One, that the defendant unlawfully killed the alleged victim, Brodus Perry. And two, that the defendant acted knowingly. Knowingly means that a person acts with an awareness that her conduct is reasonably certain to cause the death of the alleged victim. The requirement of knowingly is also established if it is shown that the defendant acted intentionally. Intentionally means that a person acts intentionally when it's the person's conscious objective or desire to cause the death of the alleged victim. A defendant's conscious objective need not be to kill a specific victim. If you find beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant intended to cause result the death of a person, then the killing of another, even if not the intended victim, would be second-degree murder. The distinction between voluntary manslaughter and second-degree murder is that voluntary manslaughter requires that the killing result from a state of passion produced by adequate provocation from the alleged victim sufficient to lead a reasonable person to act in an irrational manner. Voluntary manslaughter. Any person who commits voluntary manslaughter is guilty of a crime. For you to find the defendant guilty of this offense, the state must have proven beyond a reasonable doubt the existence of the following essential elements. One, that the defendant unlawfully killed the alleged victim, Brodus Perry, and two, that the defendant acted intentionally or knowingly, and three, that the killing resulted from a state of passion produced by adequate provocation from the alleged victim sufficient to lead a reasonable person to act in an irrational manner. The distinction between voluntary manslaughter and second-degree murder is that voluntary manslaughter requires that the killing result from a state of passion produced by adequate provocation from the alleged victim sufficient to lead a reasonable person to act in an irrational manner. Passion means any of the human emotions known as anger, rage, sudden resentment, terror, or similar emotions which renders the mind incapable of cool reflection. Intentionally and knowingly have previously been defined in these instructions. Reckless homicide. Any person who commits the offense of reckless homicide is guilty of a crime. For you to find the defendant guilty of this offense, the state must have proven beyond a reasonable doubt the existence of the following essential elements. One, that the defendant killed the alleged victim, Brodus Perry, and two, that the defendant acted recklessly. Recklessly means that a person acts recklessly when the person is aware of but consciously disregards a substantial and unjustifiable risk that the alleged victim will be killed. The risk must be of such a nature and a degree that its disregard constitutes a gross deviation from the standard of care that an ordinary person would exercise under all the circumstances as viewed from the accused person's standpoint. The requirement of recklessly is also established if it is shown that the defendant acted intentionally or knowingly. Intentionally and knowingly have previously been defined in these instructions. Criminally negligent homicide. Any person who commits criminally negligent homicide is guilty of a crime. For you to find the defendant guilty of this offense, the state must have proven beyond a reasonable doubt the existence of the following essential elements. One, that the defendant's conduct resulted in the death of the alleged victim, Brodus Perry, and two, that the defendant acted with criminal negligence. Criminal negligence means that a person acts with criminal negligence when the person ought to be aware of a substantial and unjustifiable risk that the alleged victim will be killed. The risk must be of such a nature and degree that the failure to perceive it constitutes a gross deviation from the standard of care that an ordinary person would exercise under all the circumstances as viewed from the accused person's standpoint. The requirement of criminal negligence is also established if it is shown that the defendant acted intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly. Intentionally, knowingly, and recklessly have previously been defined in these instructions. If you find beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant was criminally negligent, you must also find that the death of the alleged victim was the proximate result of the defendant's criminal negligence. The defendant's action need not be the sole or immediate cause of death. If you find that the direct cause of death was an act of the victim, before you can convict the defendant, you must also find beyond a reasonable doubt that the act of the victim causing death was a natural and probable result of the defendant's criminal negligence. The court will now explain to you the law applicable to count two, criminal attempt first degree murder charged in this indictment. Criminal attempt first degree murder. Any person who attempts to commit first degree murder where the victim suffers serious bodily injury is guilty of a crime. For you to find a person guilty of this offense, the state must have proven beyond a reasonable doubt the existence of the following essential elements. One, that the defendant intended to commit the offense of first degree murder against alleged victim Tabitha Perry, and 2B, that the defendant did some act intending to cause an essential element of first degree murder to occur, and at the time believed the act would cause the element to occur without further action on the defendant's part, and 3, that the alleged victim Tabitha Perry suffered serious bodily injury. New and known means that a person acts knowingly with respect to the conduct or to circumstance surrounding the conduct when the person is aware of the nature of the conduct or that the circumstance exists. A person acts knowingly with respect to a result of the person's conduct when the person is aware that the conduct is reasonably certain to cause the result. Intent means that a person acts intentionally when it is the person's conscious objective or desire to cause the death of the alleged victim. The essential elements necessary to constitute first-degree murder are, one, that the defendant unlawfully killed the alleged victim, and two, that the defendant acted intentionally. A person acts intentionally when it's the person's conscious objective or desire to cause the death of the alleged victim. A defendant's conscious objective need not be to kill a specific victim. If you find beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant intended to cause the result, the death of a person, and that she did so with premeditation, then the killing of another, even if not the intended victim, would be first-degree murder. And 3, that the killing was premeditated. A premeditated act is one done after the exercise of reflection and judgment. Premeditation means that the intent to kill must have been formed prior to the act itself. It is not necessary that the purpose to kill pre-exist in the mind of the accused for any definite period of time. The mental state of the accused at the time she allegedly decided to kill must be carefully considered in order to determine whether the accused was sufficiently free from excitement and passion as to be capable of premeditation. If the design to kill was formed with premeditation, it is immaterial that the accused may have been in a state of passion or excitement when the design was carried into effect. Furthermore, premeditation can be found if the decision to kill is first formed during the heat of passion, but the accused commits the act after the passion has subsided. Serious bodily injury means bodily injury that involves a substantial risk of death, protracted unconsciousness, extreme physical pain, protracted or obvious disfigurement, or protracted loss of substantial impairment of a bodily function of a bodily member, organ, or mental faculty. Bodily injury includes a cut, abrasion, bruise, burn, or disfigurement, and physical pain or temporary illness or impairment of the function of a bodily member, organ, or mental faculty. Criminal attempt second degree murder. Any person who attempts to commit a criminal offense is guilty of a crime. For you to find a person guilty of criminal attempt, The state must have proved beyond a reasonable doubt the existence of the following essential elements. One, that the defendant intended to commit the specific offense of second-degree murder, and 2B, that the defendant did some act intended to cause an essential element of second-degree murder to occur, and at the time believed the act would cause the element to occur without further action on the defendant's part. Intent has previously been defined in these instructions. The distinction between voluntary manslaughter and second-degree murder is that voluntary manslaughter requires that the killing result from a state of passion produced by adequate provocation sufficient to lead a reasonable person to act in an irrational manner. The essential elements necessary to constitute second-degree murder have previously been defined in these instructions. Criminal attempt voluntary manslaughter. Any person who attempts to commit a criminal offense is guilty of a crime. For you to find a person guilty of criminal attempt, the state must have proven beyond a reasonable doubt the existence of the following essential elements. One, that the defendant intended to commit the specific offense of voluntary manslaughter. And 2B, that the defendant did some act intended to cause an essential element of voluntary manslaughter to occur, and at the time believed the act would cause the element to occur without further action on the defendant's part. The distinction between voluntary manslaughter and second-degree murder is that voluntary manslaughter requires that the killing result from a state of passion produced by adequate provocation sufficient to lead a reasonable person to act in an irrational manner. Intent have previously been defined in these instructions. The essential elements necessary to constitute voluntary manslaughter have previously been defined in these instructions. Reckless endangerment. Any person who commits the offense of reckless endangerment is guilty of a crime. For you to find the defendant guilty of this offense, the state must have proved beyond a reasonable doubt the existence of the following essential elements. One, that the defendant engaged in conduct which placed or might have placed another person in imminent danger of death or serious bodily injury, and two, that the defendant acted recklessly. For the threat of death or serious bodily injury to be imminent, the person must be placed in a reasonable probability of danger as opposed to a mere possibility of danger. Before you can convict the defendant, the state must show beyond a reasonable doubt that a person or class of persons was in a zone of danger. The zone of danger is that area in which reasonable probability exists that the defendant's conduct would place others in imminent danger of death or serious bodily injury. Serious bodily injury means bodily injury that involves a substantial risk of death, protracted unconsciousness, extreme physical pain, protracted or obvious disfigurement, or protracted loss or substantial impairment of a function of a bodily member, organ, or mental faculty. Bodily injury includes a cut, abrasion, bruise, burn, or disfigurement, and physical pain or temporary illness or impairment of the function of a bodily member, organ, or mental faculty. The requirement of recklessly is also established if it is shown that the defendant acted intentionally or knowingly. Recklessly, intentionally, and knowingly have previously been defined in these instructions. The court will now explain to you the law applicable to count 3, employing a firearm during a felony charge in this indictment. Employing a firearm during the commission of a dangerous offense. Any person who employs a firearm during the commission of a dangerous offense is guilty of a crime. For you to find the defendant guilty of this offense, the state must have proven beyond a reasonable doubt the existence of the following essential elements. One, that the defendant employed a firearm, and two, that the employment was during the commission of or attempt to commit criminal attempt first-degree murder against alleged victim Tabitha Perry, and that the defendant acted intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly. Employ means make use of. Firearm means any weapon designed, made, or adapted to expel a projectile by the action of an explosive or any device readily convertible to that use. Intentionally means that a person acts intentionally with respect to the nature of the conduct or to a result of the conduct when it's the person's conscious objective or desire to engage in the conduct or cause the result. Knowingly means that a person acts knowingly with respect to the conduct or to the circumstance surrounding the conduct when the person is aware of the nature of the conduct or that the circumstance exists. A person acts knowingly with respect to a result of the person's conduct when the person is aware that the conduct is reasonably certain to cause a result. Recklessly means that a person acts recklessly when the person is aware of but consciously disregards a substantial and justifiable risk that the alleged victim will be killed. The risk must be of such a nature and degree that its disregard constitutes a gross deviation from the standard of care that an ordinary person would exercise under all the circumstances as viewed from the accused person's standpoint. The requirement of recklessly is also established if it is shown that the defendant acted intentionally or knowingly. The court instructs you that as to count three, the term dangerous felony is limited to criminal attempt first degree murder, criminal attempt second degree murder, and criminal attempt voluntary manslaughter. Furthermore, the court instructs you that a defendant may not be found guilty of this offense unless you find she is also guilty of criminal attempt first degree murder, criminal attempt second degree murder, or criminal attempt voluntary manslaughter against the victim, Tabitha Perry. The essential elements of criminal attempt first degree murder, criminal attempt second degree murder, and criminal attempt voluntary manslaughter have previously been defined in these instructions. Unlawful possession of a firearm with intent to go armed during the commission of or attempt to commit a dangerous offense. Any person who possesses a firearm during the commission of a dangerous offense is guilty of a crime. For you to find the defendant guilty of this offense, the state must have proved beyond a reasonable doubt the existence of the following essential elements. One, that the defendant possessed a firearm, and two, that the possession was with the intent to go armed during the commission of or attempt to commit criminal attempt first degree murder, and three, that the defendant acted intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly. Intentionally, knowingly, recklessly, intent, and firearm have previously been defined in these instructions. Possession may be actual or constructive. A person who knowingly had direct physical control over an object at a given time is then in actual possession of it. A person who, although not in actual possession, knowingly had both the power and intention at any given time to exercise dominion control over an object is then in constructive possession of it. Possession may also be sole or joint. If a person has actual or constructive possession of the thing, possession is sole. If two or more persons have actual or constructive possession of the thing, then possession is joint. The court instructs you that as to count three, the term dangerous felony is limited to criminal attempt first degree murder, criminal attempt second degree murder, and criminal attempt voluntary manslaughter. Furthermore, the court instructs you that a defendant may not be found guilty of this offense unless you find she is also guilty of criminal attempt first degree murder, criminal attempt second degree murder, or criminal attempt voluntary manslaughter against the victim, Tabitha Perry. The essential elements of criminal attempt first degree murder, criminal attempt second degree murder, and criminal attempt voluntary manslaughter have previously been defined in these instructions. Presumption of innocence. You enter upon this investigation with the presumption that the defendant is not guilty of any crime, and that this presumption stands as a witness for him, for her, until it is rebutted.
There's more of the Preacher's Side Chick Murder Trial of Latasha Daniels coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a moment from the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.